Okay, amazing. So tell us a little about. So you've got the seven odd bags. It is, yeah. Recording
really?
A podcast. Yeah.
Right now.
Right now, recording.
Wow.
Cool, right?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Detman. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Gravel Junction podcast. It's great to have you. We are talking all things bespoke bicycles this week. That's right, we were this past weekend at the Bespoke Handbuilt Bike Show at the Lee Valley Velodrome here in London in the United Kingdom. So we headed down with our furry microphone and did our laps around the circuit to speak to all the wonderful people and designers involved in the hand-built scene to hopefully bring back a bit of an audio diary for you to get a feeling of what it was like at the show. We spoke to brands such as Condor Cycles. You might remember them, Rafa Condor Cyclocross Team, one and the same. Clandestine, Sideways Bike, 7R Bags, Tailfin Cycling, Quirk Cycles. These are just some of the interviews we're going to bring in today's show. We spoke to so many wonderful people. Obviously can't fit all of it into one show, but hopefully this will give you a bit of a taster. So many wonderful stories going on. The likes of 7R Bags, for example, based in the Ukraine, could not be at the show in person for obvious reasons. So one of their friends very kindly offered to host the brand at Bespoke for them. So it just shows you, even in such hardships, the cycling community really does come together to help each other out. So that was wonderful to see and to hear their story. But let me not waffle on too much further. Let's get straight into our chat. First up, we have Condor Cycles. Enjoy.
Here we are at the Condor stand, asking about this bike for, obviously, this is an audio, not video.
Yeah.
Just to describe what we're looking at here with a paint job.
So it's based on the artwork of an artist called Camille Walala, who does massive installations using this artwork on like whole buildings and like municipal buildings and things. So like a complete installation inside and out. And this was designed for a customer's 40th birthday present to himself. But we had to work to a budget because to paint this would be prohibitively expensive to do all this detail from just paint. So what we've got here is two color paint job on the base, black and blue. And then all of the other artwork that you see that has this lovely texture on it is all made from decals. It's laser cut vinyl.
Right.
So we print the vinyl with the artwork and then it's laser cut. And that's how you get that raised effect on it. So
I kind of like the raised effect though.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
As far as like longevity wise, I mean, it's got that protection over the top, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's then got a full clear coat over the top. So it gets applied, it gets buffed down like you would normally, and then clear coat on top of that.
Okay, cool. Here at Clandestine. So tell us a bit about the brand and what we're looking at over here.
Clandestine is really just all about really pragmatic utilitarian bikes that are kind of largely based on like on and off-road load carrying, touring, commuting, like sort of Audax, you know,
right.
That kind of thing is my sort of main bread and butter. That's what I do really.
And as far as production of the bikes, like are they handmade, or you sort of have your set models and then you've got people that just tweak them?
Nah, they're all like handmade. I've got two set models. I've got a full suspension mountain bike frame called the Coombe, which I don't have here, but and then I've got the Carrier, which is a kind of commuting, touring, do everything kind of bike. But those are all custom sized, and then I do like full custom stuff, so like this tandem that's like whatever you want, yeah. I can do. But largely like cargo bikes, yeah, sort of off-roady touring things, you know, that's
Are you seeing that sort of market sort of growing, especially here in the UK, that Audax sort of scene? Or has that always been there?
Certainly the Audax scene has always been here. I think, like, more broadly than that, I think there's a real, like, growing sense that people are understanding that they probably don't need, like, a road race bike, and that actually having something that can, like, that can fit mud guards, and maybe it has dynamo lights, and it can carry even just, like, enough for a picnic or something, or, like, a camera, you know, like, just having some sort of low capacity. I think people are realizing that, and there's more...
Yeah, I've seen that from a few of the builders.
Like,
yeah, the definition of what your bike needs to be is changing, isn't it? Like the road bike, even the road bike has changed with, oh, a gravel bike can do a lot of things, as you say, having more functionality to what bikes can do.
Yeah, like this one here, I would call that a road bike, but it's got 38s, it's got mud guards, it's got lights, it's got like a bag for your flapjack and your picnic or whatever. And it's got like gearing that's sensibly geared for normal people. So it's got like a one-to-one gear, you know, so you can take that on a really long ride and still get up the hills, even if you're not, you know, like Bradley Wiggins or whoever. I don't know.
No, that's,
you know,
the thing.
It's not got that same sort of pretense that like, oh, I should aspire to be in the Tour de France. I should dress like I'm racing.
Yeah.
Well, it is performance. It's high performance. It's just a different category of performance.
Yeah, like
if you want to carry like some lunch on a normal road bike, like that's really low performance, because you've got to stuff it in your back pocket of your jersey, or like hang it off a little bag on your handlebars or whatever.
Super,
so it's like
finish,
it's a different kind of performance criteria, you know.
I like that.
Prioritizing different stuff.
Yes.
You know, I know where my priorities are, and it's flapjack.
Exactly.
And a firmness of tea.
So if you know your priorities and you stick to that, then you know you're onto something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
And I think more broadly, I think cycling. I think a lot of cyclists are realizing that, like they're remembering it.
Yeah, so, the joy of why, like, you started riding bikes in the first place. Right?
Yeah, so things like this, they're like, they're not so far off like old mountain bikes in, you know, in terms of like tire clearance and like position, the fact they can take racks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're like, they're updated, so they've got all the good stuff.
Yes,
you know, like
the good brakes. And
yeah, and through
like
axles
yeah,
and whatever.
Threaded bottom brake. All
yeah,
that, they've been around a while.
But like, you know, they've got a. The sort of a recognition that actually maybe that's a different approach that would be a lot more valid for a lot of people, you know.
I'm here at Quirk Cycles with Rob,
that's
who is going to give us a little rundown. Tell us about Quirk, some beautiful bikes here.
Yeah, so got two bikes with me this year. I've got a new model that I'm releasing called the Supra Chub. For those who follow me, last year I released a XC hardtail called the Super Chub, and this is a drop bar 29er that's the sort of cousin, brother, sister of that. So yeah, just rounding off my 29er range.
Love it. Like this is right up my alley, like I'm all for the 29er drop bar.
Yeah.
What sort of, is this your Silk Road sort of bike, or is this, what's your?
Well, this one we actually tested it on the road in Torino Nice, so the Torino Nice Rally. Awesome route, excellent ride. And it's funny actually, because Tom, the photographer, he was put on this, and I think he was a bit jealous that, you know, I'm on the Super Chub, Mike was on the Overland, so we had the flat bar 29ers, and I think he was a bit like, I'm really going to suffer, and I think he had the easiest time. It's just like, big, it can fit 2.3 inch tires. We had the suspension fork, the gravel suspension. You even got air suspension in here, so this is like super
plush
ride. Yeah, lots of cush for the tush.
That's what we like.
So yeah, and yeah, it's, I mean, the whole idea with it as well is like, because a lot of drop bar gravel bikes, they're fast but they're kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And descending on them is not,
can be sketchy,
a fun experience, especially, you know, if you're in the Alps. And literally, you know, we did a descent that was like 50k, you know, so it's like hours of sketchy descent. So having more control, so you're having bigger tires, lower pressure, suspension fork, you just get way more traction. And yeah, it's a lot more plush up front, like using drop bars and braking, you people can cramp up on really long
same
descent.
Position, exactly. Yeah.
But you don't have to hold onto your bars as tight. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot more control in there. So yeah.
And then the drop bar post, which is a lovely talking point with anyone. Like personally, I can see the benefit in it. If you're going to use the bike for that particular riding, like why not?
Yeah.
You know? Exactly.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
I'm seeing some 3D printed dropouts here. Is that something that's integrated into the build or?
Yeah, so all my builds now get the 3D printed dropouts. Mm. Been working on these for a while. Last year was sort of the launch of them.
Mm-hmm. Reasons for it? Like what would, just to kind of explain to the listeners, like are you seeing more and more brands going 3D, and it's certainly not a cost-cutting exercise, but it's because you can get the design and the feel that you want? Is that kind of
exactly. Obviously, aesthetics mm-hmm. is one important thing in them. It's something as well that's unique to me, so it's my design. It makes my bike stand out, whereas before, you'd be buying machine parts, and pretty much all the frame builders would be using the same selection of dropouts, of this, of that. Whereas this means it's unique to Quirk, and it's recognizable as a Quirk. But also it has a lot of mechanical advantages. So things like, because you can make the skin, the surface from the tube to the part, the 3D printed part, continuous, mm-hmm. it's better distributing stresses.
Right.
So normally when you have a join, stress will concentrate in that area, and that's called a stress riser. Whereas if you have a continuous skin, the stress is distributed across the frame better. So you can make a stronger part, but also that means you can drop weight.
Right.
So you can make a lighter part.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, right.
So the stronger, the lighter. I use the SRAM Universal Derailleur Hanger system.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite beefy in terms of just its actual size is quite big, but in terms of practicality, it like you can buy it anywhere in the world. And one of the problems when you're getting like custom machined parts, and then if your hanger is from a really small company, you've got to hope they never go out of business. But also, it's like if someone needs a hanger, they have to come to me, I have to order it from the supplier, and they cost a lot of money. So you're talking like 40 quid for a hanger. Whereas the Universal Derailleur Hanger, it costs £10 and you can buy it anywhere in the world. So I wanted to bring practicality into it as well.
I think that makes a lot of sense. You're seeing builders do that where you can have your unique identities like with your dropouts, etc., but then your certain stress areas, your dropouts, your bottom brackets, making those as practical as possible for repair, you know?
So of course.
Which is great. So here at the tail fin stand, here at Bespoked, and with Nick just giving us some details, he'll tell us a little bit more about the product, and particularly what you just mentioned now, before we hit record, how your bags can actually be used by other, what would you say, pannier structures, or what's
yeah,
the word?
Traditional pannier racks.
Right, pannier racks. Yes, yeah. So you want to tell us a bit more about the system.
So I guess you kind of need to rewind a little bit, in that... I guess when people think of panniers, they often think of the sort of, 30, 40 litre world traveller pannier bags with sort of plastic hooks and plastic hardware, and they're kind of floppy, and they gain their rigidity by attaching to these sort of traditional pannier racks that are sort of like, look a bit like sort of truss bridges.
Yeah.
You know, they're made up of lots of sort of struts that are 10 mil or 12 mil in diameter. And As I was sort of developing the sort of the product range, it sort of hit me that actually you could put a lot of that structure inside the bag, and have a very sort of rigid clamping mechanism to attach to a more simple arch. So what I guess if you look at our racks.
Yeah.
They look like a sort of St. Louis bridge or St. Louis arch.
Yes, yes, yeah. It's beautiful.
And they have a sort of quite a subtle sort of bar on each side. So when you take the, when you've got just the rack on, it looks like it's part of your bike.
Yeah.
You know, when you see, if you've got a beautiful, beautiful bike, you don't necessarily want to attach this sort of truss-like bridge to the back of your bike. You want something that looks like it's made for your bike, part of your bike. you've got a $5,000 bike, and you know, you want to attach something that looks good. So in order to have a rack that looks like that, you then need to rethink panniers. And so our panniers have, we've got a few different sizes, 5 liters, 10 liters, 22 liters. Inside them is an aluminium frame, and on the outside is an aluminium clamp. And it doesn't just hook, it sort of actually cams and clamps on.
Yes.
And so it allows you to use your bike in ways that you can't with traditional panniers. Traditional panniers are very good on road, it's not too bumpy. These you can take anywhere. And yeah, I guess it's part of a system. We've got our rack, which you can attach the sort of top bag. But you also get this, we call it an aero pack or a rigid seat pack. And you've got the sort of 20 liter top bag that looks a little bit like a saddle bag, but with the arch directly underneath it. So people, when you're racing in particular, it is important to be super aero. Like that, well, it's a concern on people's mind that pannier bags are slow. And so that's why we have the sort of the top bag or the aero pack. Keeps everything in line. But unlike a seat packs, so I'm now talking about the sort of the bag that goes above the wheel, which I guess competes directly with seat packs.
Yes, sure.
Seat packs are great. You know, they kind of, they're low cost. You don't need any hardware, any fixings. They just strap to your bike and with Velcro. But our take on it is sort of, it's not a super engineered approach. My background is mechanical engineering, and I sort of look at Velcro bags, and I sort of think about the fact that they sway and how that feels when you're riding, or the way they sort of can damage paintwork, things like that. And so I want a sort of more engineered approach, and again something that feels like it's part of your bike. And so that's sort of the first part. And then the second part is, seat packs only work when they're like packed tight. You know, if they loosely pack, they're even worse. And so I guess our system is, it's you don't actually have to have it super well packed. It'll still be stable.
Because it has that foundation of the bridge attached, those connection points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These sort of engineered connection points. And then the last thing is, it's top opening. So if you've ever tried to get something out of a seat pack, and especially when it's, you know, right down at the bottom, you know, you end up with a complete sort of yard sale, to use an American turn of phrase. whereas this you can get in and find without, you know, too much stress.
Like, one of the biggest selling points would be that access, as you mentioned.
Yeah, to access
be able to
is
open
huge.
And get in, get out, huge.
Time, I think this, I don't know if it's a worldwide term, but FAF. Are you familiar with the word FAF?
Yes.
FAF is like, it's a killer. That if you're tired, if you're cold hands, if you're racing, time off the bike is important as time on the bike. Yeah. And so, like, I think like access, ease of use are like huge, huge factors.
Yeah.
And so we try and solve that in a different way.
I'm here with Mark from Prova, standing in front of what I see as a purple anodized titanium beauty with a flat bar. So I'm fascinated to hear more about this build. Mark, you want to tell us a bit more about the bike and the brand in general?
Yeah, sure. So the brand, we're based in Melbourne, Australia. Been running for about 7 years, full time on the business for about 5 years. Started doing steel frames for Philip Ray Steel Frames, where we started, and then a few years ago transitioned to titanium, and now that's all our production is titanium. We do full custom geometry, tubing sizes. We have some recognizable models. So we have like gravel bikes, road bikes, mountain bikes. So people choose what particular model they're going to get, and then every single one's custom geometry, custom tubing size,
okay,
custom butter tubing for each one. So.
And the move over to titanium, I mean, I have a bit of knowledge about titanium. It's a little more of a considerably more difficult material to work with. Was there a reason for that kind of switch?
I really liked the idea of the aesthetics and the durability from the finish perspective, and the ability to play around with different finishes. And also, like, if we go back 4 years, it wasn't actually possible to build a mountain bike kind of that long with the steel tubing that was commercially available. So the titanium, making the tube sets ourselves, doing all the butting ourselves, meant that we could build bikes more in how we wanted to build them rather than being kind of led by the tubing manufacturers.
All right, here with Viola from Sideways Cycles, just Sideways.
Sideways.bike,
love that. Well, we're here at the Bespoke Show. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the brand and what you're doing here at the show.
I do like composite frames, and specifically the two I'm showing. I managed to make mostly from off-cut material and sort of the leftovers from various industries. Primarily boats for the big gravel frame I'm showing, and then there's a bit of fishing rods in the road frame as well. And I really enjoy working with composites and carbon, and I specifically say composites because that I try to escape just from carbon, because I want to do some flax stuff, do some hemp things, all this sort of stuff. But these are all carbon, and I just enjoy working with it a lot, but obviously it is a travesty how it is. Very petrochemical, all this sort of stuff. So the more we can move away from that, or the more we can just be efficient in the way we're going to use it, the better everything will be. And it means I get cheap material, so it's really fun. But yeah.
Okay, so that's a big sort of motivator behind what you're doing here is the idea of being more environmentally aware and using what's already out there in a way, as you say.
Yeah.
Even though,
yeah.
As you say, yes.
If it's already there, the damage is already done. So why not try and be better with it? Like, the answer to a lot of the problems in the world are there's dreamy answers to a lot of them, but we've got to start somewhere, and efficiency is definitely a really good place to start, being efficient with our waste and all this sort of thing. So that's what I'm trying to encourage.
That's amazing. And I see at the awards, got a couple very fancy awards going on. Do you want to tell us a bit more about what you won last night?
So I won Best Off-Road Bike, which is super cool.
Wow.
Like, considering I come from a road background, really, I built a gravel bike for the fun of it, and got given Best Off-Road Bike. I think that's also helped by the other little Dynaplug bean just there from SRAM, who gave me the scholarship. It's called the Inclusivity Scholarship, and it started over in America, obviously SRAM being an American brand, and they sponsored a few people from Philly Bike Expo to try and get more faces that you don't usually see at cycling shows and in the trade and all this sort of stuff. A bit more out there and a bit more support, and sort of whether it be financially or just through social support and stuff, to say like, don't worry, it's cool, we'll welcome you in and we'll have you back if someone's a bit off with you, which so far no one's been at all. It's amazing. But yeah, they gave me this scholarship, and they've been really helpful. But they also equipped this bike with some amazing kit. Like, I'm pretty sure these tires aren't even listed yet. Everyone's lusting over the forks because no one can get hold of them, but I've got a pair. Like, it's amazing. I got an ETAP dropper post, for crying out loud.
Yeah, the setup is crazy. It's
yeah, it's really cool. It's insane. It's lovely.
I'm loving the colorways as well. There's some
Yeah, I love playing with colours and having a bit of fun with out there stuff.
Okay, and like, any future plans? What sort of, is it as far as people buying bikes, is it a kind of custom made to order sort of thing, or what's the future plans?
Well, with the composite stuff, once I've made moulds, it's obviously far more efficient to continue making from those moulds and get the most out of them. And so with the gravel frame, it is a tube-to-tube construction. So those molds, the tube shapes are set, and a lot of the rear geometry is pretty set. But all your front end fit geometry, and within reason the rear geometry a little bit, but all of the geometry can be changed, because much like sort of mitering and brazing a frame together, I can move everything around on the jig. So the gravel frame, I'm hoping to be able to make those molds sort of work for me for a long while. And so similar tube shapes, but whatever fits we want, and make a few more like that, and just do very, very custom stuff. I'd love it if someone came to me with stupid ideas. Like, yeah. I was reading on LFGSS, some dude who wants to take his cat touring, but wants to keep it really light, and he's like trying to fit a cat box onto his Cervelo R5 or something. I can't even remember. I was reading it ages ago, and I thought, this guy, I want to meet this guy. I want to build him some crazy lightweight cat carrying specific bike. Like, anything stupid like that, I want to do. Like, I want to play with some. I want to make a cargo bike in time, which is stupid because my workshop isn't even big enough to fit a good length cargo bike, but I'd love to do that. So
okay.
Yeah, I've got too many ideas and too many dreams of things I want to do. But
well, it's amazing you throw them against the wall, see what sticks, and go from there, right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And so if people want to find out more, where's the best place to kind of see your work or contact?
I'm trying to be active on Instagram and post a few things on there, so that's got more of a sort of conversational updates of what I'm doing.
Okay.
And then I've made a little website, and I try to write a sort of blog post of a finished build when I do them.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in progress for this, which I'll hopefully have done soon. And I'm trying to write a few like bike-related things, like talking about crazy ideas or rides I'd like to go on, or just general culture of bikes and stuff.
Community,
Yeah, awesome. Exactly. And then like stuff that isn't even related to bikes, because I love my music and I love having my music on while I'm working. So I want to write a bit about music and things, but I don't know.
As you say, lots of ideas, lots to go on with. And as far as last little point there, I've kept you long enough now, the Bespoke Show, how's that been, like the community, met new people, a lot of people you already know here, how's the experience been?
So over the last year or so, Josh and Peter, who run the show, have been really good at kind of trying to link me in with a lot of things. And they have done some little pop-up shows around the place. And they did one at Ardrock, which is a mountain bike enduro sort of event / festival thing. With loads of riding and loads of stuff going on. And I'm not a mountain bike at all, so I wandered into there with a road bike and got some really weird looks. But went along there and they sort of introduced me to a load of the people who were also here. So seeing some familiar faces come into this show was really quite nice. And sort of coming to this big show, I was worried that there might be people who are perhaps a little odd and standoffish or some unfortunate behaviour, but so far not a whiff of it at all. Right. Everyone's been awesome.
That's what you want to hear from cycling community.
Yeah.
All the best with the project and
thank you.
The time.
And all the best with the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So just standing here with Artem, and he's here representing a brand for some friends that couldn't be here. Artem, thanks for being on the podcast. Tell us a little bit about what's going on over here.
Hey, so I bought a couple of bits from Seven Roads in Lazarus a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we got talking. I'm from Ukraine originally, and they're both based in Ukraine. And one thing led to another.
But come on.
And I agreed to host their stand-up Bespoked.
Okay, amazing. So tell us a little bit. So we've got the 7 hour bags. It is, yeah. Recording
really?
A podcast. Yeah.
Right now,
recording.
Wow.
Cool, right? So we're just saying they're 7R. Tell us a bit about what their products and what's the market they're in.
So they make both prefab and custom-made backpacking bags. It's all handmade in Ukraine. And they make saddle bags, frame bags, front racks, and their new bag is a gravel suitcase that fits on to their front rack.
Right, okay, very cool. And so like at the moment, obviously there's a very difficult situation happening in Ukraine. Are they able to still try and make their product?
They haven't stopped making, actually. They've been making and shipping since the start of the war.
Okay.
The postal service, very impressively, hasn't stopped.
Wow.
It's still operational.
Mm-hmm.
The things that are bought from them have arrived in just over a week to the UK.
Amazing.
Which is super impressive. It gets rail freighted to Poland and then is sent via airmail from there.
Right.
And they can get hold of the raw materials and they're still fully functioning.
Oh, that's amazing. So go on, I'll make sure to put the details in the show. I'm assuming via the website, pick out, and I'll put pictures in there as well. I mean, these items look amazing. That's really great to hear that despite all that's going on, they're sort of, you know, able to still produce these bags, which is rather inspiring. Hopefully next year they can be here in person.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the plan. Obviously, they sell through the website.
Like direct to public through the website.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But hopefully through the show they'll be able to get some of their pre-made stock into shops in the UK.
That'd
and stuff.
Be great.
Yeah.
Have some suppliers and some just like kind of shops holding their stuff, which
for sure.
I'm sure this would have been a great meeting place
for or a great showcase for the brand here at the show. So hopefully that that comes off and we get to see this. You know, you can walk in off the street and buy some here in the UK, which would be amazing, right? You know, kudos to you for representing your friends' brands like that. I think that's really, really inspiring, and I hope it goes well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
And there we go. That's a wrap on this year's Bespoked Bike Show. A really cool event. If you ever find yourself in the area, do yourself a favor. Get some tickets. Head down. You won't regret it, seeing those beautiful creations in person. It's a good and a bad thing. A bad thing because you're going to buy something that you probably don't need, but simply must have. Couple things to also mention. A lot of prizes handed out at the show. Press awards, including Best Off-Road Bike, which went to Viola at Sideways Bike. Their bike there built with discarded carbon fiber from the production of dinghy sailboats, which was very cool. We did talk about that a little bit in the soundbite. Best paint, unsurprisingly, went to Rob at Quirk Cycles. The custom job on his Japanese-inspired road bike was superlative, to say the least. I won't butcher the description of it here in an audio manner. I'd rather say go check out their Instagram. I'll put links in the show. We'll also have some of that on the Instagram, on the Gravel Junction Instagram, to have a look at that beautiful paintwork. But I would actually say there was, besides the titanium trend, the paint would be another trend. The paint was next level. So many manufacturers with extremely detailed and beautiful, well, it was artwork, really. Being someone who rides a titanium bike, I love the titanium for its aesthetic, but also the fact that I don't have to worry about scratching paint. Some of those frames I'd be too terrified to go outside with. I just want them hanging on my wall. But there was also something you saw a lot of brands actually fully painting their titanium bikes. And when I spoke to a number of them, they mentioned similar things that they're trying to get people to understand that, you know, you can paint your titanium. Like, it doesn't have to be raw. But let's be honest, a lot of people who buy titanium, myself included, likes to see a bit of titanium sticking out. It's a beautiful, beautiful color. But to know that you can paint, it gives you that option. That's good to know. All right, well, that's all we have time for this week. Look forward to the next show where we will be sitting down with Boru McCullough. Remember Boru, who's on his mind mapping round the world bike ride. He is 7 weeks in now, just finished riding through Turkey, and we catch up with him in Mumbai in India before he starts his next leg of the journey. So do tune in for that one. We get to hear Boru's thoughts of his experiences so far. As I said, that's all we have time for. As always, thank you for joining us. Remember, you keep riding. We'll talk soon. Bye for now.